called special committee, Senate Special Committee on Natural Gas Development to order. Senator Dyson, Senator Wilkin, Senator Elton, Senator Bundy, myself, Senator Seekins are present. Earlier I saw Representative Holm was in the room. I think he'll be back soon with us. We'll start out today with the Section 505 of the amendments of Senate Bill 3002, which is Section 2 of the bill. And again, looking at that, looking at the recommendations that are made by the administration for that amendment.
If you will please introduce yourself to the record, we will be certainly eager to hear your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jim Baldwin. I'm outside counsel to the Department of Law. This Section 2 of the bill before you is, you will recognize it since it was in the version of this bill that was considered by this committee during the second special session of the legislature. This section, what it does is establish in the typical way that these things are done. It establishes the method by which impact funds, which are payable under the, would be payable under the fiscal contract, would be anticipated appropriated into a permanent fund, which would be established, a permanent account or a permanently established fiscal structure that would be established within the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, which is established in the next section, Section 3 of the bill. So what it says is that this money will be available and that the legislature may appropriate it to this fund, which would be established permanently in the law, in the statutes. This is done to avoid any potential issue regarding the dedicated funds prohibition, meaning that the legislature is free to appropriate this money for whatever purposes it desires, but it's indicating that this money, consistent with the intent of the contract, will be appropriated into the fund for the purposes of dealing with the municipal impacts, which are being taken care of under the contract. And this is basically the $125 million for a local impact. And you can see that in subsection C set out there on page 2 of the bill under section 3 establishes the fund, and it becomes the place where the money is deposited and from which the department will make the grants to the local municipalities. This section 3, if I may go on to that section, Mr. Chairman, is also identical to the...
Senator Bundy.
I'm sorry, before we go on, in Section C of Section 3, subsection C, it talks about a nonprofit organization serving an unorganized borough.
That has been identified earlier as the Town Lachey's Corporation for those non-organized communities.
Yeah. So how close are we treading on tribal issues there?
I don't know. It's a good question, and we should get into that discussion. But it's non-organized communities in the unorganized borough, as I understand it, has been identified, am I correct, Mr. Baldwin, as one entity that would distribute those funds, and that would be the Town Lachey's Corporation?
It's my understanding that that's... the way the Municipal Advisory Group has designed this to work, that there would be among the affected communities in the area that will be impacted, that there will be one sponsoring group, and that would be the Tanana Chiefs. That's a testimony we heard during the last special session, which considered it the identical provision.
And Mr. Chairman,
go ahead, Senator Bundy.
Knowing Alaskan propensity for finding loose change, I suspect that there will be many nonprofit organizations who can convince somebody somewhere that even in the remotest regions of Alaska from the pipeline that they have suffered some kind of economic impact. You know, everybody left that used to work in the sewer plant and is now working on the pipeline, so now we've been economically impacted. So that is a door we should beware of.
So what you're suggesting there is that it be specifically designated, that it be a single entity.
Either that or eliminate the...
Right. Okay.
Because it's just a pretty broad window, I think, a pretty open window.
I understand.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Mr. Baldwin.
So basically, I can give you kind of the process that was used in developing this language, which appears basically as Section 3, which goes on from page 2 through page 4. We, the administration, that is, received this as a proposal from the Municipal Advisory Group and forwarded it to the administration for placement in a bill, which was done during the second regular session. This language basically followed closely an existing grant program known as the National Petroleum Reserve Alaska Grant Program. But it was believed during hearings that were held during the second special session that grant program needed modifying in certain respects, in several respects. And so modifications were undertaken during the deliberation on that particular bill by this special committee. And those modifications basically involved changes in the, I guess you would say, the transparency of the grant-making process, changes that are somewhat different from the NPRA grant process, which and those changes first deal with appearing in subsection F and basically in subsection E and F, where basically in F is where the public notice requirements are imposed for grants that are received, and then public notice is also required of the intentions to make the grants, and then there's a period of time that the grants must sit for 30 days before final awards are made. This is a change from the NPRA grant program. In addition, the language was changed from the model of the NPRA grant program in requiring that there be a tighter standard for determining the amount of impact that would qualify for a grant, or whether a particular impact qualified for a grant. And that language appears at the top of page 3, at line 3, which requires a direct or severe impact from gas pipeline construction. And that term, direct or severe impact, is defined on page 4, beginning at line 18, to give a standard from which the agency, I guess, basically has a basis for saying no when a grantee appears with a project. And it's a definition which requires a clearly demonstrable effect on a community that proximately contributes to a material change to transportation, infrastructure, law enforcement, emergency services, health and human services, education, or labor force. So that standard is, as I guess I would characterize it, as a standard which would assist the granting agency in determining when an agency would be qualified, or when a municipality or a community would be qualified are eligible to receive the grant money involved. And these were changes intended to, again, make this grant program more accountable and more transparent, and was in the version that this committee passed out during the last special session, and was, I believe, favorably received by the Senate as a whole. During the last special session, there was comment received, or there was some testimony in this committee concerning the purposes for which the grants were made, may be made, and those purposes appear in subsection E, lines from lines 16 through 19. And these purposes were language were proposed by the MAG committee. Basically, there was some change that was made in this committee having to do with socio-cultural impacts and how that particular string of purposes appears here. The version that was presented by the MAG committee presented an or for social or cultural impacts, and this committee added the words and for social cultural impacts.
Senator Bundy?
You know, again, Mr. Chairman, my case in point. I don't think there will be anyone in Alaska anywhere in a non-organized borough that won't have some social or cultural impact by a $25 billion construction project.
Thank you. Mr. Senator Bundy, go ahead, Mr.
So I think that, unless there's any further questions on this particular section, I think that that's the highlights of the derivation of that particular provision. If I may move on to section four.
Senator Wilken has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just sort of jump-starting my brain here to get back into this mode. So Jim, help me as I understand. I think it helps, if I'm correct, a couple of things. I'm glad to see that the changes we made in SB 2004 came forward and were retained almost intact, as far as I can see, in 3002. So that was good work, and I appreciate the administration recognizing that and leaving it intact. But really, the two things. When we migrate from 2004 to 3002, really the big change, of course, isn't in the municipality issues. It's in sections 1 through 14, having to do with other things other than municipality grants, and that's probably what we ought to be talking about. But back to municipalities, that's only, it's restricted to the $125 million, right? When the $125 million is gone, these sections go away. We're done with this law when that impact fund is depleted.
Right. There's based on the law, there's no other source of funds for that particular fund. That's what Section 505 does. It set up the conduit, and when that's over with, I assume the statute could sit there and be a dead letter, but...
Just so we aren't confused that this is an ongoing grant program that'll go on as long as we have a gas line. This is a specific grant program that ends when the impact fund is depleted.
That's right.
No doubt that there will be some attempts to make it an ongoing impact.
Well, there is in federal and in state, proposed state and federal legislation to put impact funds in place and be funded by the revenue streams. And that's a whole other discussion for a whole other day. But well, there's no question about that. And so, yeah, if what I said is correct, that helps me kind of get back into the mode of what we're talking about here.
Well, in existing law, as you can see there in Section 505, the commissioner has been given authority to include a term in the contract. And so what this is talking about is the contract term, which provides for the impact funds.
Senator Bundy.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, because it's impact aid, I assume that the impact would begin when there's some activity toward construction. But this says that Sections 1 and 2 would be retroactive to January 1, 2004. That seems like another really large open door.
Okay.
Is there a reason that we have that length of retroactivity?
Mr. Baldwin?
That is a reflection of the desire to cover the negotiations that occurred to place these kinds of terms in the fiscal contract, to cover what the administration has been doing. So the January 04 date is intended to cover the period of negotiation. So the fact that this term was negotiated and the fact that this structure was set up would be retroactively covered. So it's not intending to create any eligibility or anything other than what's already been negotiated.
And thank you. And
Senator Bundy?
That seems like a reasonable explanation. Perhaps we should have some verbiage that says this, that retroactivity does not include claims for any activity that occurred prior to actual construction.
Interestingly, Mr. Baldwin, is there any reason, is there a particular reason why it would be necessary even to make the terms retroactive under the Stranagas Act?
I think that the retroactivity is more important for some of the provisions that were in the 2000 and, I'm sorry, what the number, what that,
2003.
Some of those contract provisions, it's more legally significant that they be made retroactive. This particular one, I don't think it's absolutely critical that it be retroactive. We made it that way because this was negotiated during that period of time. And so all we're trying to do is make sure that what was done is covered and that there's not some sort of a claim that could be raised about that.
But even there, we had some pretty extensive discussions on this subject in the Judiciary Committee. And even there, because of the fact that the contract was negotiated in a manner that when I read the act itself, it tells me that the contract has to be negotiated to meet the purposes of the Stranagas Act. Not necessarily does it require that it be negotiated to comply with the letter of the act itself. And in this case, when the legislature gets the final contract, it looks to me like the findings that will be given to us are not that it meets every term of the Stranded Gas Act as much as it meets the purposes of the act, that being loosely interpreted to get this stranded gas to market, to establish fiscal terms for that. And I'm not an attorney, thank God, my wife says. But it appears to me that when and if the legislature were to approve a contract and authorize the signing of it, more than likely the bill would read something into the effect of, notwithstanding any other provision of law, the legislature hereby authorizes the administration to execute the attached contract. Wouldn't you believe then any of the exercises to try to make the Stranded Gas Act retroactive would kind of be then just extra work?
I've thought about this a bit in all the time that we've been working on these bills, and just as to whether we really do need the retroactivity. And I think there's a good point that you're making, that it may be just that. For the reason why your wife is glad that you're not a lawyer, people have over-lawyered this to a certain extent, and I'm guilty of that myself, but of trying to be absolutely cautious about making certain that there would be no potential for someone reaching back and alleging that whatever was done without proper authority. But I think that once it's all done, the question is going to be whether the operation of the contract, the operative effect of the contract and the obligations that go along with it, are they properly authorized from the point they are operative? And by any rational consideration of that, that's not going to be until after the contract's signed. Mm-hmm. And so retroactivity may not be needed.
I mean, we're not really fooling anyone here. We know that the negotiations that the administration have and most legislators that I've talked to have said, well, we could not, and not a lot of them were even here in 2003 when the act was reauthorized, we cannot envision all of the complexity of a contract that might be proposed at some time in the future. And most every legislator I know of would admit that with that in mind, there would be necessary changes to the statute as we begin to see the complexities of a fiscal terms contract. And that with that in mind, I can't imagine again that we would, as a legislature, authorize the execution of a contract without trying to close that door and say, notwithstanding any other law, any provision in law, legislature authorizes the signing of this. At that point, that law seems to me to supersede any previous requirement of the Stranded Gas Act for approval of the contract. Wouldn't you think that would be true?
I think that as far as the state is concerned and our parties, the other parties to the contract, they're going to be concerned that is the contract valid and enforceable under state law.
Right.
And I think that if a good case is made that it is from the date that their obligations become due, then I think that's the main consideration. What we on the side of who have been drafting these various provisions have been worried about is whether, as a part of the whole development of the contract under the Stranded Gas Act, the fact that the administration has had to depart from the act in the kind of terms that are being proposed for consideration by the public and by the legislature. And so we've been concerned about making sure that the ability to do that is covered in a retroactive way. But I don't think that it's absolutely legally necessary. I think an argument can be made to that effect. But it's just the nagging concern of the lawyers who have been involved to make sure that it is covered, if we can get it covered that way. But we understand that there are realities in the legislature, vote requirements and things of that nature. But before I think the legislature or this committee makes that decision to go without retroactivity, we'd like to be able to come back with you after some degree of reflection and advise you on that again, because I think that would it could have serious effects if we're wrong about that. You know, I think it's sort of like a chicken soup measure. It may not help, but it won't hurt either. It's kind of the way it's been, I think, added in here. And yeah, the realities of how it plays out in the legislature or other matters, and certainly within your province and not mine. But
Would you agree with me, though, that the legislature has the power to override any existing statute with the passage of a new statute?
Oh, yes, certainly.
And that's where my colleagues and I have looked at this and said, we're not fooling anybody that this contract doesn't meet the letter. It wanders outside of the four corners of the law from time to time, and that's why it's a proposed contract. And that's why we have to decide whether or not we want to change the law to accommodate some of those deviations. So we probably argued this long enough. It's just It's just my opinion that we have the ability as a legislature to override that law and to squelch any claim that the contract doesn't comply with law by writing the law to make sure that the authority has been given by the legislature to do that. But go ahead. Other questions, Senator Bundy?
I'm just going to observe that it's a long-held principle in archery. It's easier to hit the bullseye if you draw the target after you shoot.
Well, that's true.
We meant that.
Have you ever tried that?
That may be well what we're trying to do here.
Yeah. As an archer, you probably should. You know that. The any other comments or questions at this point? Sorry for the interruption. Go ahead, Mr. Baldwin.
Yes, Section 4 is another section that was requested by the Municipal Advisory Group. They wanted to extend the life of their entity. Until after the final distribution of the impact money. They're given an advisory role for the grant program as well in the preceding section, and it makes sense that they'd be around, and the law was needed, existing law was needed to be changed since they were set to expire on the date that final action is taken on the application for which the group was appointed. So they want to be around in existence, and it seems appropriate for that, for the purposes in the preceding section, and so our bill includes that language that they requested. Section 5 has to do with fixing a problem that was noted in the way the foundation formula is calculated.
Let me interrupt again. Senator Bundy has a question.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Under Section 4, the reimbursement, can I assume that it's the intent that these expenses are limited to the typical per diem that we give to other advisory groups?
I believe that's our understanding.
Just for the record, that's the intent then. Thank you.
Yeah. And, okay, go ahead.
Okay, Section 5. First, I have to admit that I'm without my usual crutch today of Eddie Jeans, who is not available for the committee today, who understands the inner workings of the foundation formula, and so I will beg off if I can, having to explain exactly what the problem is. But there, a problem was brought to us that because of the nature of a payment in lieu of tax being considered by the state assessor to not be a tax, it is something else. It is a contractual payment, and therefore it changes the way he calculates the full and true value for purposes of the foundation formula, or would have that effect without other direction from the legislature. And this problem was identified for two municipalities in particular, Valdez and the North Slope Borough. And it involves the way they are allowed to determine the required local contribution for purposes of calculating their public funding, for the public school funding. This Section 5 would allow the development of regulations which would basically just provide that you treat the PILT the same way you did the tax, and try to leave the parties in basically the same position they were before the fiscal contract entered the picture. And that's the purpose of it. And we are told that this would, with this authority, they could fix the problem identified by the state assessor. And I know it, during the second special session, the committee was presented with a spreadsheet. And if I would be happy to locate that again and resubmit it to this committee, so it will be in the record if it is not already, if that's not already happened. And if it's not already happened, I apologize for not following up on that, but I will see the spreadsheet outlining the financial impact of this, of the failure to fix this problem.
Okay. Other questions? All right. Mr. Baldwin, I think we discussed it once before, and there are some issues that we probably should cross-reference back to 2004. But when we talk about community, what is the definition of a community? Do we have that in front of us?
It is not in this bill. There are various definitions of community in the statutes and that relate to the Department of Commerce. I'm not conversant at this point to tell you what they are, but
a number of years ago we passed a law that allowed a community of 25 or more people to be able to establish the limit of alcohol possession that constituted a felony, which, you know, at that time I felt was some stretch on our constitutional ability to be able to say 25 people living, the Pilgrim family could have been a community that then would qualify under state law to be able to determine how much alcohol possession in their community would constitute a felony. And part of maybe Senator Bundy's question on this stems back to what does constitute a community? How do we define it? Are we getting into some of the issues of tribal communities versus incorporated communities? What is the intent there of the law to be able to determine if there's a large family, do they qualify for an impact under this section of the law? Would the Pilgrim family with 25 or more members qualify for impact aid from a gas pipeline? And because they're in some proximity or would have some effect? And there are some open-ended sides to this, I understand. And I realize there are some real impacts. Years ago, during the oil pipeline days, I was on a borough economic advisory committee in Fairbanks that dealt with some of the impacts of the oil pipeline. And they were huge. I mean, in terms of education, schools were double shifting. There were some big problems that came along with that. And when we look at the impact of a potential pipeline, they also are huge. Senator Dyson and I just returned from a PENWAR meeting in Alberta, where Alberta was saying the construction of the McKinsey gas pipeline would, what was it, somewhere between 3,500, 4,000 people, Senator Bundy, directly employed on that, Senator Dyson. And there were huge impacts that would be felt as a result of that. But there are some questions that some of us have as to what do we define as a community, and what is a socio-cultural impact? What is the definition of that? I mean, you're probably right, Senator Bundy. You could say that everyone in the state will be impacted to a degree. And what is that socio-cultural impact? And how do we define it? Senator Bundy?
Not to beat this poor dead horse for a little bit more, but I very clearly remember a couple in Anchorage, after having worked on the pipeline making six figures, were now back in Anchorage and were asking for some state program to help them readjust to a normal salary. There's a social cultural impact. Blue ticket would have been a better impact, but in any case, that is a... It is a, I think, it needs more definition.
Mr. Chairman, I think the intent here, and if we have not been precise enough, we certainly would be willing to look at this and come up with more specific language that would perhaps satisfy this concern. But the intent here was to provide a means of meeting impacts of those unincorporated communities that are, you know, lack the structure or the recognition by the state as a municipality or a borough, and to provide a means of meeting their impacts as well, recognizing that they are quasi-governments, I guess. I'm struggling here for the right word to be careful enough here to and precise enough at the same time, but the idea is to be able to reach out and provide the impacts beyond the organized municipalities and reach the villages and other communities that are out there that are not under the traditional government structure that's recognized in Title 29.
Okay. Senator Bundy?
Just to add some more information, remember, any group that has 10 students can qualify as a school. And so that definition of community continues to need to be, I think, fleshed out. And I know I'd be remiss if I didn't remind Senator Wilkins that this would be a terrific opportunity to encourage some of these people who aren't incorporated to begin to be incorporated. And I think maybe putting a carrot in here for incorporation is one way to solve this problem of defining what is a community.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Baldwin, look at the wages. Now, I remember during the oil pipeline, in fact, not too long ago, Jim Sampson from the AFL-CIO testified to this committee in Fairbanks that they made a mistake during the oil pipeline, and they drove the wages up too high. And as a result, I can still remember the city of Fairbanks, as an example, saying we have to pay our police and firemen more because if we don't, they're going to go work on the pipeline. Is that what we're talking about here, where the impact of a construction of a pipeline pays such good pay that it causes communities to have to pay more in wages, and so we're looking at some way to supplement that from this fund?
I think that if there are impacts on law enforcement, for example, the which you referenced there, it seems to me it's a broadly stated purpose here in subsection E on page 3 of the bill. They would have to show that there was a direct and proximate, it was as a direct and proximate result of the development of the gas line. And if they can do that, if they can state that case and prove that, then it would seem to me that they could get impact funds for that purpose.
So then at the end of that period of time, when the impact money is all gone, they got impact money just to supplement those wages for that period of time, the community is going to have to find some other funding source to continue to pay their police and firemen at the inflated wage?
I would presume they'll have to resolve that in some way, yes.
Right. They'll need to have some impact funds to get them used to paying being paid a lower wage. Right, Senator Bundy?
Well, and that leads me to another question I had. Was, as I read this, basically they have to convince people that there's an impact, but don't they ultimately just have to convince the commissioner? So we are really laying this, I mean, he has to work with the advisory group, but the ultimate decision is going to be one person. And that person, we'd hopeful, would be making good decisions, but there's no guarantee.
Mr. Baldwin?
Well, the commissioner is the ultimate decision maker. That's very clearly stated in the bill. Because of the way the process works, he has to make these decisions in the sunlight. He has to give notice of the grant proposals that he's received. He has to give notice of his proposed awards, and then he has to wait a period of time, 30 days, before he actually makes the awards. So the commissioner is going to have to do this in the light of day, and that was the transparency that this committee thought was important during the second regular session. And that's why it was. This was an amendment that was put in at the instance of Senator Wilken, basically. So that.
And I
Senator Bundy.
Thank you for clarifying that, because that's what I thought the process would be. And there may have been, in Alaska's history, people will say, damn the torpedoes, I'll do it in the light of day, but I'm doing it my way. And this is, I think we have, at this table, discussed other grant proposals of impact aid that have been artfully used to provide community centers and that sort of thing. And that's done in the light of day by a small group. Now we're going to have one person making these decisions. And so, again, I'm not arguing that it's a decision made by the legislature, but that it just strengthens my need to really, and to use Mr. Baldwin's phrase, to over-lawyer this, to tighten it up, because ultimately it is one person making that decision.
That's correct. Okay, go ahead, Mr. Baldwin.
Well, I think that's the bill, Mr. Chairman. The retroactivity provisions we've discussed. If there's any other questions?
Other questions on this bill so far? Senator Wilken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The discussion about community is sort of interesting. So I looked here. The only place we talk about community is on line four, excuse me, page four, line 19. All the rest of the references are to municipalities or to nonprofit organizations serving the unorganized boroughs. So I just, maybe as we move forward, we might consider striking community on line 19, page four, and inserting what the references we have in the prior three pages, and that is municipalities and nonprofits serving the unorganized borough. So that may clear up the need for some nebulous definition of community. Just a suggestion. And I don't think we should be under any illusions that this impact money is going to last very long. If past municipal grant programs are any indication of the future, and if instead of serving, this was modeled after NPRA, instead of serving 5,000 to 7,000 people, we're going to probably serve between North Slope Borough, North Star Borough, the New Delta Borough, however far that goes, and the places that aren't connected or aren't organized along that line. Let's just say for the moment there may be 125,000 people in that group. I would assume they would have the same needs and wants that the prior grant process has taken and found to be the grants have been meritorious. If you put it on a per capita basis, this 125 will be gone in the first year, maybe 2 years, and we'll be back to what you spoke of, I believe, and that is doing the impacts on our own for those places that need taxes. But at the same time, those places will have an enhanced tax base because there will be economic expansion going on, just like it is in Fairbanks right now. So, it cuts both ways, but it also helps. But I wouldn't think for a moment that this $125 million is going to last. We may be able to measure it in months. We're not going to measure it in too many years. That would be my guess if we look back.
Well, there's a schedule for the payment of it that covers more than 2 years.
Well,
but I'd have to look in the it's laid out in the fiscal interest finding and in the contract. But it starts, I think, 6 years out and goes for a period after that. I can get that for you.
And so does it meter it out, Jim?
It's metered out.
Amount per year?
Yes.
Okay. I'll find that. And so then that brings us back to Senator Bundy's concern about retroactive effective date, which I flagged that, and I'm sure we're going to talk some more about that. Okay, well, that helps. I'll find that.
It starts in the future and then goes for a period after the start date, so.
So then how does the February, or the January 1st effective date 2004, how does that tie into the FIF?
It starts, as I said, it starts at a period in the future, and I believe it's, I'd have to reread the contract, but I think it begins somewhere around projects sanction is when that money becomes available. I'll have to look at it. I'm just really not fully informed at this point. I mean, I haven't reviewed it for a few weeks here, but it doesn't start for a period in the future. It has to do with when the construction actually is going to be beginning. That's when they start getting the money. Mm-hmm. And then it comes in on an annual basis for a period after that. There's also provisions for handling inflation of those dollars if it's delayed. But that's like in the ninth year, if it goes beyond 9 years, that there's a delay. Mm-hmm. So it's not that the $125 million is going to become available all at once. The retroactivity doesn't bear on that, as far as I know, because it's out in the future. So retroactivity wouldn't have much to do with that receipt of the money. It's just, as I said, the retroactivity is an issue that we've been considering because of the whether there was power at the time to negotiate that kind of a provision. That's what that goes to. And that goes to what the chairman was saying was, well, is that really relevant if we're supplying the power from a particular point in time? And it's really just a lawyer's issue, I think.
Thank you. And I'll go look at the FIF. Thanks for referring me to that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bundy.
And you said that these dollars would be adjusted for inflation, so we're talking $125 million in nominal dollars, but it would be more than that in the future.
What the contract says, if the payment of the money is delayed because the project is delayed somewhat beyond, I think it's 9 years, then there is an inflation factor that applies to that money after the ninth year. But up until that date, that $125 million is not inflated.
I think if the project's delayed, there won't be any money, so that won't be a moot point.
Okay.
This is Steve Porter. I am looking at the contract and could tell you the payment amount and the years if you were of mind to ask.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. And Steve, do you have any other further comments at this point?
Just I'm just available to.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I remember correctly, in the first special session, we did hear some testimony from people who had been involved in the Municipal Advisory Group. My understanding is that the changes that we see reflected in this reflect the recommendations that they had made, but it may be helpful if at some future committee meeting we either have somebody from the Municipal Advisory Group available to answer questions that Senator Bundy has asked, or provide a letter of some sort of affirmation that they're comfortable with the language that we have here.
Okay. And it is correct, as I understand it, that this is strictly an advisory group. They will continue to advise, but the commissioner has no compelling reason to have to comply with the advice. Okay, other than take a lot of heat if he doesn't, I suppose. Other questions on this section of the bill? Okay. Now let's take a short, about a 5-minute recess. And let me give you just an idea of what the committee's schedule will be over the next few days. Tomorrow, starting at 9 o'clock, we'll have our committee will be meeting, and we will have a representative of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission available for us. I imagine there will be some protracted discussion as to what their role is and what rulings and regulations they have that. And particularly in the area of basin control, and so we will have discussions with them. I imagine that will take most of the day, at least through the morning, and in that regard, as we go through that discussion, I'll use a roundtable type of a format. I see a couple of our legislative consultants are here. Welcome back, gentlemen. Members from the producers I've seen are here. Welcome back. And the administration is always here, looking over our shoulder. So we'll have an opportunity for a controlled but freewheeling discussion on the FERC issues tomorrow. We'll roll into Wednesday on some of the other provisions having to do with economic or with fiscal certainty. And some of that discussion, I'm sure, will be preparatory to amendments that we'll look for on Friday to the Stranded Gas Act, having to do that will probably closely approximate what we saw on 2004 in the last special session. Those amendments we'll start working on Friday in the morning. And Thursday, we have Anadarko has indicated that they are willing with their comments. We're also going to invite Shell, see if they want to make some comments having to do with their concerns with the contract. We'll also invite Pioneer and Chevron, if they would all like to be able to give some comments to the committee. Again, that will be on an open roundtable type of a discussion, so that we can have all parties to be able to discuss the matters. And then, as I said, Friday we will look at amendments to Senate Bill 3002. And I imagine some of, like I said, what you see in 2004 will probably be discussed on Friday as amendments to 3002, some of the provisions in that bill. At that time, we'll tinker with the definitions and a few other things, I'm sure, having to do with our discussion today as well. So are there any other questions from members? Senator Wilkin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've talked about the Port Authority trying to help us work through some of their concerns. I eagerly await them to come to the table.
Correct.
And instead of doing it in the newspaper, do it at this table so I can try to understand their concerns.
We, Senator Terry and I, will be having discussions tomorrow with the Econ One folks, and I'm sure some of the other consultants that are helping us as we take a look at an analysis of the Port Authority. And I have asked my staff to be in touch with the Port Authority people, which I think he indicated he had tried twice this last week and weekend to be able to get in touch with Mayor Whitaker and their general counsel. They have expressed some concern that the parameters that they be involved in defining the parameters of the study that we're going to ask our consultants to do. And I have no problem with them being involved in the conversation. However, I'm not going to tell our consultants what they're supposed to come back to the committee with, other than the fact to give us an analysis of the viability and competitiveness of the project, of the Port Authority project. So I don't think it's not going to be terribly tight parameters on that, but I will continue to I'll invite them to come and see us, and I think we've got our guys ready to go on giving us some independent analysis, and I also am eager to be able to hear their presentation. So we'll continue to. I will, Senator Wilkin, reiterate your request as well to get this. No CONFD, no confusion, obfuscation, or foot dragging.
Mr. Chairman, in the vernacular of the season, it's time to fish or cut bait.
Gotcha. And I'd rather be fishing today. But with that,
as they bite better in the rain in Juneau, and it's raining.
Well, I didn't say where I was going to go fishing that Saturday, but with that, is everyone pretty much understand what our calendar will be tomorrow through the remainder of the week? We will not meet Friday afternoon. And we will reconvene on Monday afternoon. So that'll give everyone time to get home and get back for the weekend.
You're assuming, Mr. Chairman, that we will not have completed our session business?
I hope that we will have. And Senator Bundy, amendments to 3002 we'll start looking at Friday morning. Mr. Elton, so that you understand where we are on that. So any other questions? Seeing none, we are adjourned for the day. Thank you very much. It's now 5 minutes after the hour of 3 p.m.